So hello everyone. Today I will talk to you a bit about CMHA Ontario because we're the host agency of this webinar, and we always like to share what we're doing here at CMHA Ontario. Mostly CMHA Ontario work in a broad manner to ensure that the mental health lens is embedded across sector at policy, health system, and program levels using a social determinants of health framework. We have a network of 28 local branches and communities across the province, which help us a lot to develop a strong capacity to mobilize local partners. We manage several programs here at CMHA Ontario that support over 30,000 persons every year. And this includes our youth campus mental health program, our Talk Today program, which is a comprehensive mental health awareness initiative for amateur athlete sports in Canada. And we have two flagship programs. Based on cognitive behavior therapy principles, Bounce Back and Living Life to the Full, which are accessible both at individual levels with coach support and the community level as well through various organizations that are in your community. The Living Life to the Full program here, your host program, have been successfully adapted to the needs of different population. We have reached with our program youth, caregivers, people living on the autism spectrum, older adults, seniors, post-secondary students, and also the Black communities. We have also worked closely with several ethnocultural groups developing both cultural and language adaptation. And right now our program is available in French, English, Cantonese, Mandarin, and as of this year it will be available in Tamil as well. We are also starting to receive new funding, and we will be in various communities across Ontario for the next, the fall and the winter 2021. So before we go any further, I would like to introduce you our speaker today, Dr. Nazrin Khatri. She is a registered clinical psychologist, gerontologist, neuroscientist, and educator with over 15 years of professional experience. Dr. Khatri completed her clinical internship in CIHR-funded postdoctorate at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. From 2004 to 2012, she led the Mood and Related Disorder Clinic and funded the Cognitive Behavior Therapy Service at Baycrest Health Sciences. Since 2012, at the Rotman Research Institute, the Baycrest University of Toronto, she has studied the neural link between the midlife depression and the development of dementia. She innovates treatments for depression and anxiety for older adults, including CBT, mindfulness, and exercise. Dr. Khatri research has been funded continuously since 2006 and has been published in peer-reviewed academic journal and book chapters. Dr. Khatri has completed over 400 presentations, serve as mental health advisors for Bell's Let's Talk, Girls E-Mentorship, Women's Brain Health Initiative, the Jane Goodall Foundation, and has been cited by CBC, CTV, the Globe and Mail, the Wall Street Journal, and 20 other media outlets. In 2013, she was awarded the Woman of Baycrest Innovators in the Research Award, and in 2016, the Government of Ontario Leading Woman Building Communities Award for the enormous impact of her work as a psychologist and a gerontologist at Baycrest. She is also a proud McGill alumni, and she is currently the vice chair of the McGill's Women's Leadership and Philanthropy Committee. So without any delay here, I will let Dr. Khatri speak for maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, I'm not sure. And she will just basically introduce a bit the conversation today and see how we can just all pitch in and continue having a good conversation together. So, yeah, okay, one moment here. Nazrin, we don't hear you, so.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, you can.
Okay,
yes.
Great. Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome. Thank you so much, Ellen, for that wonderful introduction. And so this is our fourth and final week meeting together in this program. I can only speak for myself. It's been a wonderful experience. And so I'm going to not be giving sort of any mini lecture or anything today, but I want you to know that everything is online from the previous 3 weeks. So I won't really repeat that today, but I'm just going to set things up. I was hoping we could have a conversation today about where we're going. So it's not so much the pandemic, but the plandemic. So when things are opening up as they are now, what can we expect going forward? So one of the things that is going to be an issue for sure is the idea of an echo pandemic. So once this kind of clears and we go into the new future that we're going to share together, I think it's fair to say that there's going to be some adjustment to reentry, but there's also going to be an adjustment in terms of mental health. So 50% of Canadians say that their mental health has suffered during the pandemic, and the same number of Americans as well. And so what that means is that there's kind of different layers of problems. So one reason that people are going to probably, you know, need some time to adjust and start to feel more well or more like themselves through in the post-pandemic period is that quarantine itself has a lot of psychological sequelae or impact. And some of those things are things like being less connected, so trying to reconnect because you've been isolated, you may have been feeling more lonely, you may have missed milestones, or people in your family may have because they haven't been able to be together. So that reconnection takes a bit of time, and loneliness makes us more anxious, makes us more down. So that's one aspect. Another aspect of quarantine, though, is that people start to become sort of hypervigilant. So they start to have PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder-like symptoms. So it's not to say that people are, you know, everyone is going to be clinically unwell, but we're all feeling a little bit more anxious than usual, a little bit more on edge, not sleeping as well, having sort of, you know, disrupted sleep or unusual dreams, all these kinds of things that are the sort of the soft signs of PTSD. And so what I'm really saying is that it's going to take time for even very people who are very well emotionally to kind of get rid of the stress, the cumulative stress of this time. And that probably isn't that unusual. But then there's a third reason, which is that there's people who already had mental health problems such as clinical depression or clinical anxiety. And those would have become probably worse during the pandemic. For some people, it might have improved. But so that's the other issue, is that people who were already unwell, this could have exacerbated their symptoms and they'll need to be engaging in treatment and being, you know, making sure they stay on top of their conditions going forward. Then there's another reason, which is that some people who were on the border, so they were kind of more prone to anxiety and depression, I'll just stay with those examples, may actually have developed something that was more of a disorder during this time because of the stress. And then finally, another reason why I think there's probably going to be more of a, like an echo pandemic in terms of mental health after the health pandemic is over, is because this has also been an economic crisis. There's been a lot of problems during this time that didn't necessarily have to do with quarantine. So many, many people have lost their jobs during this time. So so many people all at once. So there, you know, that would be a stress for any individual at any time. But there's been a lot of adverse events. So adverse events tied to quarantine, like spousal abuse is up, child abuse is up. In terms of reported cases, people may not really be physically safe in their self-isolation in their homes. They may have had some economic impact of the pandemic. So that is a stress that is not necessarily tied to self-isolation, but is tied to what we're going through with COVID-19. And then beyond that, There's also quite a bit of unrest at the moment in different ways. And so depending on the country that you live in. So this has been a time of turbulence in many, many ways. And so that kind of sets the stage as to why people may need time to sort of heal and to kind of optimize their well-being after the fact. So with that, I think I'm going to kind of open it up. Helen?
Yes, I would also maybe bring the whole idea of how this whole pandemic has been also impacted people of color a lot more, our indigenous population as well, and people who live in poverty in general. So these are the kind of also discussion that would be interesting to bring at the forefront if this is something that is of interest to you.
That's right. So essentially, I think that it's fair to say that during this time, people who had any kind of disadvantage or different types of inequalities have really been magnified by this experience. Sorry, Elena, I don't think we can hear you.
Sorry. Talk about, we're having a lot of questions coming in. Would the whole Black Lives Matter movement and social movement be considered an adverse effect?
No. I think it's because it's an advocacy. So I don't think that in and of itself, Black Lives Matter is what I would see as a positive movement because it's going towards equality and advocacy. I think that I'm not a political analyst. What I can say is that people standing up for themselves is always a positive thing. But what has happened is that there's been some, in some places at some points, aspects of violence, aspects of clashes with, different factions of the society and things like that. And so that's not maybe helpful, but in terms of actually having movements, and Ellen and I were actually speaking about this before we started recording, which is that, what's positive then? What could possibly be positive coming out of the pandemic? So when we talk about the good things, it's that people have a chance to kind of, organize themselves. So whether it's Black Lives Matter, or whether it's, more kindness, more understanding about the idea that we're also interconnected. And that when you don't know what you've got till it's gone. So the idea that even though self-isolation is opening up in many areas, it's kind of fluid, isn't it? I mean, things are opening up in some areas, closing again. And, this is kind of what we can expect, is that there's going to be all this kind of change. So it's not to say that there's nothing positive that can come out of this, but it certainly has been a turbulent time. And so that can sometimes impact mental health in a negative way.
Absolutely. And I would maybe say of Black Lives Matter movement that mostly this pandemic has probably bring this, yes, of course, there's the death of, of many Black men usually that are horrific to see in the open light, and we're starting to have over our head of this kind of situation. But there's also, this was an issue that was there way before the pandemic. And sometimes, things like pandemics or sort of give enough energy for things to really, a movement like this to really come along. And in that sense, I don't think it was an adverse effect of the pandemic. It was more something that became much bigger because the pandemic has also affected the population, the population of colors in general, and the indigenous population a lot more. But Maya is bringing a bit of a conversational comment here with this. And she says, and this is interesting what she's saying, she says, it is extremely psychologically impactful and emotionally draining for those of us facing oppression, which right. And in time of pandemic, it's layers over layers, right?
Right. So let's talk about that a bit. So one of the reasons why this is so stressful is that it's global. So it's unprecedented. And I'll kind of speak to the idea of oppression. So let's just say, people who are oppressed or feel oppressed in any situation all around the world. It is really magnified because anytime there's a crisis in the world, it doesn't usually involve everybody. So there are other countries, there are other parts of the world, there's other aspects of the society that can jump in and help out or learn from what others are going through or whatever it may be. But in this case, it's like everybody is trying to, we're in the same boat, but unfortunately we're trying to build that boat and sail at the same time because we've never had this experience. And so it makes it very difficult for people who already had disadvantages or were experiencing oppression, because day-to-day life can often be like a hill, like an upward sort of battle in many, many ways. And then this just really adds to it. So I think that there's definitely that aspect to it. The other part is, I just want to finish with one thing, which is that it's layers and layers of crises, all of which affect people who experience oppression more. So whether it's the economic crisis that we're in, the health crisis that we're in, because we know that healthcare is not equal around the world, and certainly not even within Western societies for different members of that society. It's also a time of kind of a social pandemic, in the sense that because people have to self-isolate, they don't have the support that they need. And then lastly, because they self-isolate, it can cause more problems for people who are oppressed, because they may be in a situation where they are forced to self-isolate, which is necessary, obviously, for in a health pandemic, but that is actually not safe for them due to domestic violence or whatever it may be.
Yes, absolutely. I had something in mind, but I can't remember. Anyway, we can move on. She says, thank you so much for addressing this.
You're welcome.
So that's good. There's another question here. How do we deal with losing loved ones during this pandemic? Not able to participate in funerals because of physical distancing and limitation on gatherings. The whole grieving without being able to seeing someone before death is very important in the grieving part, I guess, right? And not sure if this creates some trauma of some kinds, but...
I think it's different for different people, but no matter what it is, this is this is how we grieve. This is a tradition. This is how we honor those who are passing from this world. And so I think, my heart goes out to anybody who's had that loss, and we're all very sorry for that, specifically, always, but really at this time. And I think the best answer I can give to this is that there's articles coming out on, grieving in the time of pandemic, and we can make those available as part of our post-webinar email to everyone, because it's more than I can say right now. But essentially, people are trying to find a way to grieve together over loved ones in this time, because it's very, very difficult.
Absolutely. We need more questions coming in. Can you unmute yourself? I'm not sure if everybody's shy or it's just because somehow you can unmute yourself. If someone could answer me, would be nice. Okay, well, we've got some more questions coming in.
Okay.
Okay, so she's continuing in the grieving. Somebody says here, very, very sad. Even people who we don't know who have lost life to this virus makes it extremely sad. How do we handle this example? Even people we don't know, how can we honor those? Because it's really something that has been affecting everyone, this pandemic. Mm-hmm. We do feel a lot closer to those who passed away, even though we don't know them actually, right?
Right, and I think, so there's a few different things going on. One is that it's on the news all the time. So you're seeing, you don't know the individuals, but you're hearing about the numbers. So it's very difficult. And I would, kind of guide people to limit their intake of the news, not because we don't need to face or understand that there's a lot of loss and a lot of death with COVID-19, but because we want to keep ourselves psychologically safe while we're going through this, because news can really hit us on a very visceral level. And there's a point at which it's not really helpful anymore. It's not adaptive for us to be watching the numbers go up and up and up every few hours or however often people are catching the news. So I think it's important for us to be able to just kind of bear witness in a general way, even in this webinar, talking about saying that it's painful. It hurts to see this kind of loss on many levels, whether people are losing their health, their wealth, their jobs, their connections to other people, aspects of their mental health. So we want to talk about it and open it up, because that is part of the healing, I think.
Okay. How can we overcome the fear and stress to have close contact with clients during this period? So probably she's a frontline person, okay. And she's right. Talking about, yeah, I think that's what the question is about. How can we overcome the fear and stress to have close contact with clients during this period? So yeah, we forgot about a lot about our frontline people in this pandemic, right? And, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure who was taking care of them during that time, but it's a very good question.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I think here, one of the key things is to focus on what we can control and control that. So of course, wearing appropriate PPE, following whatever the health guidelines are as we learn more about the situation and we try to adapt in a healthy way. And then try your best to let go of kind of worries that run away with you, which is natural, but on the other hand, unhelpful. So making sure that you have time for yourself, even if it's just a few minutes a day, whether it's prayer, meditation, yoga, nature, something where you can try and rebalance and get grounded again, so that this is not the only thing that you're focused on. Because I completely appreciate that it's stressful and it causes a lot of rumination, but we want to be able to kind of stop that thinking. And I think Helen had said last week that, I'm not quite sure if I'm paraphrasing this correctly, but where the attention goes, the energy flows. Yeah. And so please try and take your attention off of your health worries about seeing clients, but just do what you can do. Do the sensible things and then try and let go of it.
Yeah, so it's the idea of energy flows where attention goes. So it means that what you focus on amplify. And yesterday in one of the course I'm giving in Living Life to the Full, we were at session 3, which is about how we manage our thoughts in that dynamic of the vicious cycle around, what you're thinking create inevitably some emotion and therefore some behavior, right? So if there's fear and stress here, so there's some emotions and behavioral impact to that emotion. So it's really maybe about taking a look at the thought process that gives you that fear to start with, and evaluate whether it's its assumption, it's whatever it could be, if it's really real in bracket, because it can be very real. But and also the idea is really when you're in that vicious cycle, you change only one thing, either the behavior, the thought, or the emotion. And that usually tend to move things into the right direction. So right. It's about being...
I think of those three things, the easiest thing to change is the thought. So always to remember that it's okay to have emotions. It's okay to have negative emotions or to amplify sometimes negative things that, you know, everyone gets upset in different ways. But it's also important to remember that a thought is a thought. A thought is not a fact. You know, yeah. A feeling is a feeling. A feeling is not a fact. But it's okay. Yeah. They do give us information. But there's a point at which they're not giving us information anymore.
That's it. So really, overall, it's to try to make sure to have this dynamic serve your purpose.
Right.
So right?
Right.
in Living Life to the Full, they talk about bad thought. I don't like the idea of bad thought. No. Every thought can be useful for something, right? But it's really to decide, is this thought really what I'm trying to accomplish? Is this going to generate the behavior and the feeling and how I want to feel to accomplish what I want to accomplish at this particular time? Right. And stay in the moment is one. That's what we teach in session 3, basically, of the Living Life to the Full. And it's fresh in my mind. I thought it yesterday. So hopefully this helped whoever asked this question. Somebody was talking about, I've got lots of them. Somebody wanted to have specific example of oppression. Maybe if we want to talk a bit more about how oppression manifests in our communities and in our society in general. Is this something you feel comfortable in talking a bit?
Well, I mean, I think, so I'll give one example. One would be poverty, that people who are living in poverty are more likely to feel oppressed because they may feel that they have less power, less social agency, that things are less fair for them when it comes to healthcare or healthcare outcomes. They may feel more unsafe. They may not be able to. So a very specific example is if somebody is doing a job that involves, that's an essential worker, but not necessarily a very valued essential worker. They may be placed in a situation where they need to work because of the poverty that they're in, and they're called to do so because they're essential workers. But at the same time, they may feel unsafe. So it is very difficult. It's a very difficult situation to be in.
Yeah, it's usually quite associated with inequity, really. Right. And we've certainly seen this with many of our frontline people during this pandemic. You know, there was something I saw on internet, and it was an image saying, well, if you want to be wealthier, why don't you find a real job beside the one at $10 an hour? And then the other piece of that image was, please, please, please save me, you who work at $10 an hour. You know, meaning that they become people who work at very low wage in our health system, and in not just our health system, but all of those important services we were counting on, like the supermarket cashier and all of these people, you know, became so crucial to keep the whole system going. And yet they're most likely to be the most oppressed in our society. And that really brought that piece at the forefront during the pandemic.
Right. And then I think it speaks to the point of whatever movements are kind of not coming out of this, but are being magnified by this in terms of advocacy and people organizing themselves to shine a light on oppression wherever it is. Hopefully something like that will come out of this for people who are delivering your food, people who are frontline workers in different ways and taking risks on our behalf, for us to value them more and to change some of the inequities going forward, because they and others are what's gotten us through this. So it raises their profile. And I think that these are often unsung heroes. There's many other kinds of unsung heroes, but just, you know, in terms of our very specific example.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really about breaking the barriers for people to have access. You know, there's some, some of you are coming from everywhere in Ontario and even Canada and the States, but here in Toronto, United Way have done a great work at some point in really identify areas of poverty in terms of resources in mm-hmm. various neighborhoods. And we realized that the poorest neighborhood had the poorest access to health services, social services. Many of them had to travel a lot more than average people in Toronto to have access to those services. And many of them didn't have the flexibility because they had to oftentimes work two jobs to make ends meet. So these are all aspects of oppression as well,
right?
And inequity. Yeah. So let's move on. We will we all have PTSD when this is over? I sure hope not.
No. What I was trying to say is that people, I was trying to kind of characterize the kind of emotional impact that this pandemic is having on people. And So there's going to be a rise in low mood, a rise in anxiety, and not necessarily a clinical level, and a rise in symptoms that are kind of PTSD-ish. Some people would have PTSD, but that's more likely because they experienced really severe adverse events during the time of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to pathologize this and say that everyone's going to have PTSD. What I'm saying is that it's important to be kind to ourselves and to lower our expectations and understand that it has been very difficult. And so after this is over, you know, we sometimes don't realize, I don't know if this has happened to other people, but it's a very common experience to feel kind of, a little burnt out after going through a stressful experience. At the time, you've got the adrenaline to take you through it because humans are very adaptive. And it's only later that it kind of starts to you think, wow, I feel really exhausted. So I'm not trying to paint a negative picture. I'm merely saying that it's important to seek treatment when you need it and to be aware that there's going to be a little bit of an echo once this is over.
Yes. The second part of our question was, can you speak to how we will have to learn to adapt to the new normal, whatever this new normal is?
Yeah, I guess what I mean is that the sense that I get, because I've been talking to thousands and thousands of people through the webinars and different things during the last, especially around the last 2 months, and I get the sense that people are still holding their breath until things return back to the way they were. But I think normal is a word we can kind of retire for now. And we just are looking towards a new future, which we are partly molding ourselves. And so whenever you do something new, it takes more energy. So just like saying that normally I would be with all of you, we'd all be in a room together. We'd be having coffee, meeting before and after this talk, and those kinds of things. So I've had to learn, this is not a major example, but I've had to learn how to give my talks and be able to have conversations with people about mental health and public health and things like that in this way. And Helen and I have worked together on this series, and we're learning as we go. And so that's different than me doing my job the way I was doing it before. So that's just a one tiny example of how some things that have changed will change for good, and some things that have changed will go back to the way they were before the pandemic. But essentially, every time we have an adaptation, there's nothing wrong with it. It's good to grow and adapt. The world is always changing, but we have to also appreciate and accept that it's going to take a bit more energy. And some of that energy may come in the form of anxiety or you know, feeling a bit stressed by things.
And I think all this will bring us a bit out of our comfort zone in yeah. what we need to, what we, and that's what we fear, right? To sometimes be out of our comfort zone. Yeah. Some people are happy to be out of their comfort zone. They're more, you know, adventurous type. Some are a lot more sedentarious and they want to stay in their comfort zone. But I think this new normal to me, the way I see it, is really about, saying, yes, let's do it one step at a time. Let's not try to adapt to everything every day at a certain time, but give us the time to learn the new way of living for the time being. And it is really about, if this is your comfort zone, you know, just every day, make sure you just push it a bit, not too much.
Right.
Try it once or...
Yeah, the way I look at it is, you know how they keep referring to the pandemic as, you know, waves, you know,
right,
in the sense
yes.
of a curve, you know, so flattening the curve, getting under the curve, being flattened by the curve, whatever it may be. So I like the kind of the surfing analogy. We need to be able to ride these waves because there's probably going to be more than one. And so that's part of what it is. So it's learning to surf, but that doesn't come overnight.
Absolutely, and you need to not to be afraid to fall, and then come back again and fall, and that's what going a little bit at a time, you know, it's a marathon, right? So what we learn right now is going to be good resiliency as well for any other issues that may be happening in the world
right.
eventually.
And I also want to send the message that resiliency is sometimes not what people think. So I'm glad you brought up that word. I think people sometimes have a misunderstanding that resiliency means that nothing touches you, that you will plow through this like you plow through everything else and nothing will get to you. No, resiliency is knowing when to lower your expectations, when to slow down, when to kind of say, oh, okay, so some of this feels okay and some of it doesn't. So people who are able to adjust to circumstances have a better chance of being resilient, not people who are pretending that nothing is happening and putting a lot of pressure on themselves to do everything the way that they were doing it before.
And it's a good segue to the next questions. How do you prepare ahead of time to be resilient for no matter what happens?
Yeah.
How to build up strong psychological strength for now and in the future, since this is going to last for a longer period of time than we thought?
Right. So it's very important. So the first thing is, it's important. Research shows that people who are resilient or building resilience or want to build resilience is to strengthen your relationships. So having, you know, relatively positive relationships, nobody has perfect relationships, where they feel they have someone they can be themselves, they can tell their troubles to, they can share their joys, they can problem solve with. It's very, very important. Our social relationships give us meaning. They give us resources. They give us, you know, this is stress release. It gives us joy. It gives us a lot of things. And so it's important. And I think a lot of people are realizing that maybe they don't have the social support they thought they had or that they want to have. And so this is a time to try and kind of retool that, because that is the boat that you're swimming in a way, or not swimming in, but sailing in. And so part of resiliency is having good, solid relationships with people, different types of relationships. The second one is having a healthy lifestyle. Somebody who has a healthy lifestyle overall, so it's the 80-20 rule. You know, you don't have to never have a donut, but you know, you're trying 70-80% of the time to have good sleep habits, to be active, to have, you know, to be in nature, those kinds of things. It really helps a lot. And then another aspect of this is attitude. So it's not just like, you know, you're born resilient or something. It's something that you can develop. Resiliency is a skill that we can develop lifelong. And so, because resiliency is also tied to wisdom, that's why a lot of us, when we get older, are actually much happier, much more on an even keel. It's not just sort of a stereotype. It's actually true that as long as a person is financially stable and physically and emotionally healthy overall, they're more likely to be happier at 70 than they were at 30. And that really speaks to resiliency, because where does it come from? It comes from experience. It comes from learning and becoming wiser about the choices that you make.
I can testify to this. I'm close to 60 and it's...
How are you feeling?
So much better than when I was a teenager.
That's great.
Well, I've come a long way.
Okay. Well, there you go. You're the proof.
But I did what you've done, you know. I mean, the network, making sure you also have a good network of professional, health yeah. professionals, right? Connecting to your community health center is a good way to keep connecting to, I don't know, the community kitchen or whatever it is.
Yeah,
so
there's so many of these. Sorry, I just want to jump in. I don't mean to.
Yeah. No, that's okay. Go ahead.
You have so many good points I want to lift up with research. The another aspect of resiliency are people who do something that outside of themselves. So whether it's because they have a religious faith, because they have a, if you want to call it a community faith, because they volunteer. So people who do things without any reason, in the sense that they're not trying to get something back from it, tend to build resiliency. They know how to get meaning and satisfaction from something, even if it's not just for entertainment or pleasure or something. They can get really good feelings from doing good.
Yes, and in Living Life to the Full, we're talking about reconnecting, trying to go back to your childlike attitude. So yeah. Retrain yourself to be wowed with simple things in life, you know, and see things that you haven't looked at, especially, you know, when we're in an environment like a lesson, a teaching environment, everybody sit at the same place all the time and have the same view of the room all the time.
Yeah.
So by just switching a bit this, you know, these simple things, if you go to the park every day, choose another bench. It will give you another angle of life, right?
These
are little things, but when they're multiplied, it really brings you into another place and help with resiliency. It helps with staying vibrant and alive. And all of this is good. It's good practice, I guess, for resiliency.
I agree.
Humor is good too.
Yeah.
So where's my questions here? Okay, I need questions to come in, please. All right, so we talked about resiliency and psychological strength. Somebody says, I worry so much for the impact on my children. On my children. I worry so much for the impact on my children.
Of the pandemic on your children. How old are the kids? I mean, children who are like very little or children who are teenagers?
Can you answer that, please, whoever sent that question? It's coming in soon. 8 and 10.
Oh, 8 and 10. Okay, so quite young children. So yeah. The good news about that is they are going to be less impacted by this than you are. So, you know, the human brain takes 26 years to develop. So when you're 8 and 10, just like Helene was saying that she's happier now than when she was a teenager. Why? Because in terms of your socio-emotional development and your brain development, when you're 8 and 10, things can be quite extreme, right? So things can be all good or all bad or scary or something, but this time will pass. And your children will be back in a routine that is healthy for them, where they are, you know, that's more like it was before. And this is something that they will not more than likely have any kind of long-term impact on them. Now, so having said that, if there's something that specifically concerns you and you think that, you know, they should you should take them to the doctor, or they should see a mental health professional or get more support. It's, you know, that is also very helpful, but there's no reason to think specifically if they were healthy and had good sense of well-being before this, that this is going to have like a long-term impact on them. Because children are more in the moment than adults, as Ellen was kind of saying, but that isn't because they're sort of, I mean, the real reason for that is because the brain development is at a place where they don't see so much into the future. So one way to take them through this is just to focus on the present. So what are we doing today? What are we doing in 2 weeks? What is the plan for the first part of the summer? You know, and kind of bringing it back and grounding them in that way, in the present, because that's what they can understand. Structure is very helpful for children at this time. The younger they are, the more they need. In terms of, and then they just kind of do their tasks. So now we're having a snack. Now we're going to do a little bit of online work. And right now we're going to be doing our sort of summer activity, which in lieu of camp or whatever it may be. And so it's a very, very difficult time for parents, because what made two career families or single parent families possible is childcare. So whether it's camps in the summer or some other kind of childcare or school, that's how we are running our society. So it's enormously difficult and disruptive to try and do both things at the same time. So whether you're homeschooling and working, whether you're trying to keep the children healthy and occupied and active in this now, you know, in the post school sort of period while you're still working. So it's really hard. I mean, in a way, it's tremendous that more hasn't been done, because actually the people who definitely need our support in terms of being frontline workers are parents at this time, because it's just helping the society. It's helping us get through this, you know? So it's a very important investment. So I hear a lot of frustration from parents of different ages, but especially of this age, between, you know, like really young to about 14.
Yes, and she says, oh my goodness, it was so good to hear this. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, I would say to parents, frankly, this may be a good opportunity for parents to organize. And for to kind of say, wow, you know, we really need to be ready for future pandemics or future disruptions in terms of childcare, of safe, healthy childcare, because that's something we should all be invested in.
I was online at some point, and there was a lady who was saying, she was a single mother, and she was very disturbed at the fact that she couldn't bring her kid going grocery shopping. She had no options. She couldn't leave her kid in the car, in a hot car, or, you know. And then I gave her the idea that try to see in your neighborhood if there's another woman like you, you know, who is struggling like you are. And then while you do your grocery, she takes care of the kids in the parking lot, maybe. And then she does her grocery. And it may take a bit more time, but it's a way to support each other since you're having the same problems, basically. And right. It may create some friendship as well and bring you out of social isolation. And she messengered me at some point about a month later, and she couldn't thank me enough for the idea. So some people really use all kinds of ways to really overcome this kind of situation. Our mother here is very happy of your answer. She's happy whatever she heard from you, and she thanked you. So let's move on here. We do have... So we talk a lot about children. We're back to, I also know of other people who have loved their loved one to other illnesses, right. But due to COVID-19, no opportunities to honor them and give them condolences.
Right. So, I think a loss is a loss. And so while this pandemic is going on, I just want to speak from a health perspective. It doesn't mean that other problems or health problems are going away. So it's been an issue specifically in this way, which speaks to the same idea of I'm going to send some resources about grief. So it's not about grief from not just from deaths of COVID-19, but deaths in general. And the other part of it is it's really important. I just want to say as a kind of public health message to stay on top of your physical health while this is going on. Don't be afraid to contact your doctor. So even though there's different ways now of seeing patients, or some of it may be online, some of it may be in person, but to do it safely and to ask your doctor about what's the appropriate PPE that you should be using if you visit the doctor or dentist or whatever you need to do, because so many Canadians and Americans have chronic health conditions that they're managing, not necessarily older people. I'm talking about anything, diabetes, high blood pressure, anything. And so it's important to stay on top of your health. Please don't retreat from the healthcare system while this is going on. So I'm glad for this message because it brings up the idea of not only deaths that are non-COVID related, but also health problems or mental health problems that are not COVID related. Mm-hmm. So all these things are going on. I'll give you one example that's troubling, which is that vaccination rates are going down worldwide, but they shouldn't. I mean, children still need to be vaccinated. Adults still need to be vaccinated for whatever they were supposed to be doing. They need to stay on top of their health.
Absolutely. We have time for more questions. If you had something in the back of your mind, please send that over to us. Because right now I have no more new questions. So please send us some more. It's also close to 11:01. So some people may want to leave, but we're here. We're open to continue the conversation for another 10 minutes maybe, if it's necessary.
Sure.
Right?
Although we're right on time.
Yeah, so we're right on time.
If there's more questions, that's okay too. If there's more questions, we'll stay.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for this. So some people are leaving right now. I would have loved to hear a bit more around the dynamic of, and I would have loved to hear if some people in our group here is working around domestic violence issues and how people cope and how they do this. Do we want to go there or? I'm not receiving, what is the status of living life to the full? If we wish to refer friends of the program, if it's still running. Okay, so Living Life to the Full is really much of a project-based program in various local area. So we don't have like the program available all the time on a regular basis. So we do have some program that will start outside the GTA, the Toronto GTA, in the next few months or so. We will have some new programs in Toronto as well, probably up to 5, 6, 7 courses. So it may be possible to register them there. So you can always refer people to me and I can see how I can fit them in some groups when they're available. Otherwise, there is also the possibility of referring them to our Bonds Back program, which is similar to the Living Life to the Full, but it's the format is much different. It's really a coaching format where participant needs to be quite proactive in the program. There's lots of exercise to do in between sessions with your coach. So it's a different approach, but it can be as effective. And many, this is offered in over 17 languages, I believe. I think we're up to 17 languages now. So it could be, if someone really need help now, it could be an excellent program to refer someone to. So I will share when we will send the recording, all the links for these programs so that you're aware of it, okay? So hopefully this answered to your questions. All right, so it looks like people are moving along and we don't have any more questions.
Okay.
Let's see here. Just want to give the last chance to someone. Okay, so Nazrin, thank you so much. This was really a fun way to bring the conversation going. Probably we'll see what we can do maybe in the fall, see what kind of conversation we can have, what topic we can bring at the forefront. So please, if you do have any ideas of topics or around the mental health support, it can be a broader social determinants of health as well. So let us know, and who knows, we may continue this in the fall. We'll have a chat about that.
Great. Thank you, Ellen. Okay. Thank you, everybody. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure being with you all. And please stay safe. Have a wonderful weekend. We feel like we're in the tropical island of some kind. The weather in Toronto is amazing. So enjoy yourself. Stay safe, please. And don't take any risk. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you.